Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day and welcome to Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. Produced by Sharka Creative and made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that service built Lipolis Electric. Don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis. Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard. And White Plains Hospital, along with Michael Lampriola, landscape design and construction of Armonk. This is the Cup of Joe political show. I'm John Marino, and we are joined by Mary Jane Shimsky. Mary Jane Shimsky, Westchester County legislator representing the 12th district. She is also the county board's Democratic majority leader. 16 of the 17 members of the county board are Democrats, with the exception of conservative Margaret Kunzio. You are the leader of those 16 Democrats on the board. Your district, by the way, runs through the lower portion of the Rivertowns area of Westchester, Ardsley, Dobbs Ferry, Hastings, Irvington, also part of the town of Greenberg, including the Edgemont portion of Scarsdale, most of Hartsdale, too. It's a pretty wide and expansive district. You're in your fifth term on the county board, and again, being the Democratic majority leader puts you in a special leadership role, especially during the pandemic, and a lot of people think it's over and done with. I say it's not that. If this were a baseball game, we'd be in the middle of the sixth inning, maybe, I think, and with that in mind, as we reopen step by step, how do you think reopening is going? Just right, too slow, too fast, or is there another way to do this?
I think it's probably going about right. I think that during the summer, it's easier to keep the numbers down because more activities are going on outside as opposed to inside. I tend to be very conservative, not in the ideological sense, but in the safety sense on these things. Mm-hmm. So my view might be a little different from most people's. Mm-hmm. But I think opening just about anything outdoors is fine. I think areas where you may get big crowds, you know, you're still going to have to think about precautions like mask wearing. Indoors, restaurants, bars, and so on. I've got a young adult child at home with me for the time being, and I hear that many of the bars, for example, in New York City, are requiring proof of vaccination before they allow people through the doors.
That okay to do that? Some say, well, that's a sign of a police state. I say, no, that's a sign of people in government and in society overall looking out for us, making sure that we're all doing what we should be doing.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I find kind of ironic is that a lot of the people who say, well, I should be free to do whatever I want, and who cares if I pass a potentially deadly disease on, are not thinking about the possible consequences to other people. And some of them say, well, if just lock yourself in the house, lock yourself away. That's what we should do with our senior citizens. But many of our senior citizens, as we know, were locked away in nursing homes. And that's where they died in the largest numbers. We have to think about the public health. And I feel very sad if an ideological faction in this country, especially one that claims to be pro-life, honestly doesn't care who they kill.
I had one person say to me, you know, John, you got vaccinated. Well, you're only thinking about yourself. I said, huh? I think I'm thinking about you too and everybody else around you and me that we come across.
Absolutely, because the vaccine does a much better job than anticipated of preventing contracting the disease. Of course, it's an almost complete guarantee against hospitalization and worse. But the fact of the matter is, there's still, say, a 1 in 20, 1 in 25 chance that you could be walking around carrying asymptomatic COVID. And once again, you don't know what the vulnerabilities of the people you may run into might be.
And you might pass it along to somebody who refuses to get vaccinated, and then they say, well, why didn't I get the vaccine? By then it's too late.
That, there's been a certain amount of buyer's remorse on those arguments that has been going on. Of course, earlier in the pandemic, there were people whose last words before they were intubated and died were, what are you doing to me? This disease doesn't exist. It's a hoax. Some of that has calmed down a fair amount because I think once you have over 500,000 people die of something, it becomes that much more difficult to deny reality.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a fair number of people who don't really think this is a big deal on a certain level. Either that or they honestly don't care about other people.
Mm-hmm. And I look at the 3 million dead worldwide in number, and that's all the convincing I need.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that number is rising. And one of the problems we have is we don't know what's going to be happening with all of the new
mutations,
the variants that are coming along. And we are now finding out in this country that more and more adolescents are getting hospitalized. More and more adolescents are getting intubated. Lord knows what the long, assuming they survive, Lord knows the long-term effects it will have on their lives.
And that is something I think we don't really look at, the long-term effects. People say, well, I've had it, I'm okay. But think about the long-term effects. And you see star athletes like Eduardo Rodriguez, pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, missed all of last season, contracted it, had a heart problem. Marco Rossi, hockey player for the Minnesota Wild, 19, 20 years old, missed the entire season after contracting it and seemingly won't even talk about his experience. That's all I need to see, things like that, that if it can hit the healthiest people on this planet, it can hit anybody and damage anybody.
And one of the things I'd like to say to your listeners, if you have children, you have grandchildren, you have adolescents and young adults that you care about, please, please, please urge them to get vaccinated. It's partly our duty to protect each other because we are all a community, but the other thing is too, it can end up causing them serious harm too.
With all this in mind, do we have enough people around the county vaccinated right now?
There are still communities that do not, whose rates are lagging elsewhere. In the river towns, I think if we were an isolated group, we probably would be at herd immunity right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain communities where we are not.
How do we get those communities to go and get the vaccine, enough people to go and get that vaccine? How do we convince them to do that?
Well, John, there are essentially two problems. There's the reluctance, which is, I don't think it affects me. I believe the disease is a hoax. I got it, so I'm good for life, even though we certainly don't know that to be the case.
These all may be famous last words, as they say.
Yeah. Exactly. But then there are also people in our less affluent communities. Sometimes people think of Westchester as an updated version of the Dick Van Dyke Show. But we have a lot of poor communities. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of poor neighborhoods in our urban areas. And a lot of these people don't have the time or the resources to take 3 buses up to the county center and 3 buses back home. We really do need to get to people where they are. And we are doing more of that, but we still have a long ways to go with that. Actually, my favorite vaccination program is actually in Louisiana. They actually sent the health workers with the vaccine out to bars. And a lot of people refused the shot, but a lot of people took it too.
Mm-hmm. Do we need to maybe have, let's say, the Beeline bus system, for example, set up a service approved by the county board, by the county, to send smaller buses that the Beeline has. This is just a thought. To people's homes in these areas where vaccination rates are a bit too low and get them over to a facility so they don't have to take three buses there and three buses back like some do, as you pointed out?
That might be a possibility. I mean, the Beeline bus system, I'm not sure what they have in terms of smaller vehicles, but our we do have a paratransit program for the elderly and the disabled, and they have smaller vehicles.
Right.
But basically for a vaccination program, you're talking about a few people and a few suitcases worth of stuff. You can actually go to them. And we've had more success with booking time in churches, in community centers, and so on. But I think to get the biggest bang for the buck at this point, that's probably the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Do we need more community outreach centers providing the vaccine, or are the numbers for that pretty much there?
It depends. Now that we're trying to get the younger people, some of our high schools are hosting vaccine clinics.
Mm-hmm.
I visited one at Dobbs Ferry High School a few weeks ago, and lots of parents were pulling in their children.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was very happy to be there. Certainly the young people were very well informed about what the risks were with COVID, and they were very happy to finally get their chance at a safe form of immunity. There's another program in Hastings this afternoon that I'll probably be stopping by right after we finish here. But I think to get the younger demographic, the schools are really great, although the logistical problem you're going to have now, John, is with a two-dose regimen. With school ending in a few more weeks, getting the second shots might be a little dicey.
Can the school stay open during the summer, be open just for that, for vaccination purposes? Because if you get that first shot, you got to get that second one.
I don't know for sure, but I assume that that would not be a problem because our schools are open for other purposes,
right.
You know, staff development, summer schools and so on. So presumably we can make arrangements with many, if not most, school districts.
I heard a parent in another area of Westchester, not your district, tell a different media outlet, well, you can't tell me I have to get my kid vaccinated. If you're 16, 17, 18 years old, at that point, there are certain decisions at that age that I made. And if I wanted to get vaccinated, if this happened when I was 16, 17, 18, and I wanted to get vaccinated, and I know my parents would have made me on day one go get the vaccination, but just in case, I think I'm old enough at that point to go on my own to do this.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the legal age is in New York. I do know at worst, it's age 18.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, people are going out. You know, if you look online, there are stories from individuals saying, you know, I snuck around my parents and I got the vaccine and things like that. At that point, you certainly are capable of making any healthcare decision on your own. And this is certainly no different from any other.
Mm-hmm. Governor Cuomo says that he'd like to have the state have at least 70% vaccine compliance statewide before we truly and fully reopen across New York. Is that number a bit too low, a bit too high, or just about right, considering that we hear different numbers all the time about what herd immunity might be?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I tend to be a little on the safety first side when it comes to things like this. I think that was probably based on the first guesstimates of what herd immunity would be. We now know that it's probably a little bit higher than that.
I've heard 80 to 85%.
Yes, that's entirely possible. And, you know, clearly I think we'd like to do better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I said, during the summer, it should be pretty painless to do a lot of activities.
Real concern seems to be what happens in the fall once the weather gets colder and we're not out there during the hot summer heat. I think that's the real concern from health officials I talk to, too.
Right. And even now during the summer, I am very hesitant to, for example, eat in a restaurant. I've done it a couple times, but you know, I've looked around to see how far apart the tables were, and
I've done it once.
I think where the air vents were, but
the place where I'm going, they have each area, even at the bar, plexiglassed off, so you and your guest can go, or your group can go and stay together, even at the bar, and that's it, and that works for me,
which is helpful. They also have that for those of you who may partake. Nail salons do the same thing,
right?
And it at least helps prevent, you know, widespread broadcasting of large amounts of whatever
viruses. Right, and I think people feel comfortable with it like that when they see that, at least from what I've seen.
So
that seems to work. We'll see when the numbers come out the next time whether that works or not, and as we continue to track into the fall. CDC guidance about masking, not masking. What the CDC says and says we can and can't do, is the guidance sometime confusing, or is it more like different strokes for different strokes, like a lawyer interpreting a legal code?
Well, I'm a lawyer by training, so, you know, I may have a little bit more of a tolerance for this kind of thing. But I think that if people kept in mind certain common sense rules that... And actually, I think there was a rule of three at one point that, you know, there were three factors. One was distance, one was inside, outside, and I don't remember what the third one was. But essentially, if two of the three were okay, you could probably get away without a mask. But if two of them were not okay, you should mask up. I think there are common sense ways to do that, but I'll tell you, the one time during all of this that I was really unhappy with the CDC is when they said that completely vaccinated people don't have to wear masks, and this is why. That may be true for completely vaccinated people, but we also know that given what's going on with the political polarization in this country and that percentage of people who still believe this is all total nonsense, even with close to 600,000 dead at this point. There is a market online for things like fake vaccination cards. No one is going to start going up to people who are not wearing masks and essentially carding all of them. And quite frankly, there's about 25 to 30% of our fellow citizens that we cannot trust with our health, safety, and well-being. And what that honor system did was essentially gave them free rein to do whatever they wanted. And that can really increase the risk for higher numbers, especially after the summer.
I know people who were very leery from day one during the pandemic, don't go near them, don't touch them, et cetera. And the CDC comes out with the mask guidance a few weeks ago about fully vaccinated people being able to take their masks off. And some of those people took the mask right off, to which you have to remind them, at least I think so. Gee, what about March of 2020, April of 2020, the way you acted then, the way you're acting today, it's as if nothing really happened. So I know people want to get back to their normal lives, but I do think, like we pointed out earlier, that we have to be cognizant of those around us. We could be fully vaccinated. We could somehow contract COVID, and then we may be asymptomatic. We may be okay, but we can pass that along to someone else. Is this a real major part of what we need to do, educating people maybe a bit more about the risks of being fully vaccinated, but still being able to pass COVID on if it gets into you?
I think there does need to be, we need
Talk
to continue the consistent education. Obviously, we're in a different phase and the message is somewhat different, but we do need to continue the education. And the other thing that I found about this is that we have somewhere between 60 and 70% of the population, which has been really community-minded during all of this. They've donated to their food banks. They volunteered at their food banks. They tried to help others. They wore their masks. They got the vaccines as soon as they qualified, you know, who were really looking out for themselves and for their neighbors, meaning that in the biblical sense of the term. Mm-hmm. But you still have a certain percentage of people in the country who, it's not just the COVID though. I mean, their general sense of community mindedness is often horrifyingly absent at this point. And I don't, what we do about rolling back some of that selfishness is going to have to take something bigger than this.
Do people sometimes forget I am my brother's keeper?
Yes. People of goodwill sometimes forget, but there are people who are like militantly opposed to the entire concept. And that's a real problem. Mm-hmm. Because when you have a big negative situation like a global pandemic, people die because of that, and people have died because of that. And I don't know how they live with themselves, but they think they're great.
I know people who've come to a number of people who came to this country from previous dictatorships in Eastern Europe and other places around the world, and I see their skepticism. I understand their skepticism from the standpoint of what they experienced growing up back home. And I think part of what I feel I have to do is try to remind them, it's okay, you're not there now, you're here. You've seen, how many years have you been here? 15, 20, 25, 30 years. You see, it's a totally different kind of society. So trust it, that America is America. It's about differing with one another, and trying to find a common solution in between. So trust it and go with it, that you will be okay. And I see some of those people step by step coming around. So I think we need more of that.
I think that sounds right. And, you know, I was just thinking, you know, about what you said, John. And when you think about it, we as a society might be particularly primed to be distrustful of government because we are made up of so many of refugees and descendants of refugees.
That's what America is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we, once again, we do have to look out for each other because that's the only way we protect ourselves. And some people, you know, for their own reasons, may need a little bit more discussion, education, time, and up to a point, we should work with them in good faith on that. But human lives are human lives. And, mm-hmm. you know, it seems that there are just some people who don't really care.
Mm-hmm. Mary Jane Shimsky is the 12th District Legislator on the Westchester County Board, and she is the Democratic Majority Leader here on Westchester Talk Radio, the Cup of Joe political show. I'm John Marino. Mary Jane Shimsky, as we hit about the midway point now of 2021, look at the county budget where it is now. Think back to December when pen was being put to paper and everything was settled negotiation-wise, and in a negotiation, as they say, if everybody comes away somewhat unhappy, then probably some good was done in there too, because everybody got something they wanted, but maybe not everything. Midway here through 2021, your thoughts on the county budget. Do we have enough money appropriated for what we need for this year? If not, where maybe could there have been more appropriation-wise? And look ahead to 2022, money that may not be somewhere now, where might we need to appropriate funding next year?
Okay, in terms of the micro, does this department or does this line item within a department need more? Could it go with less? That's its own issue. But the really good news here, John, is because we had the coronavirus stimulus funding bill pass Congress, we're okay. When we passed that budget in December, it was a little tight. there were things we were resorting, we put in the budget in terms of borrowing for things we'd normally like to put in the operating budget, and so on. But, we were still kind of holding our breath at that point because we did not know what kind of aid was going to come from Washington, quite frankly. Because every government, no matter how well-financed or poorly financed it is, definitely took certain hits during the pandemic. That package that passed through Congress and was signed by President Biden put us in really good shape. There may still be places where we have to rejuggle a little bit, but it's more giving more where we need more, and it's not necessarily taking money away, because that funding package is going to do really right by us as a county. So we should.
In your mind, do you think Westchester has gotten enough stimulus-wise, a fair percentage of what the county should get?
It seems to be right in terms of getting us through the crisis and what you could reasonably expect as the consequences of the crisis. Mm-hmm. I think, the amount of money we're going to see, which just in terms of magnitude is somewhere between it's more than $100 million. And that will put us in pretty good stead this year. I think that there are some challenges ahead. A lot of those will be taken care of, though, as the economy rebounds, which it's already doing. And, ironically, John, everybody was worried about sales tax and what was going to happen to our sales tax revenue.
Yeah.
And granted, people were not driving their cars very much. I think there was one point where I went close to 3 months on one tank of gas. And granted, I drive a Prius, but still, that's quite a long time.
Right.
But people were buying more locally.
That I know.
They were not going away on vacation. They were staycationing. They were patronizing their local stores more and their local various amenities.
Right.
So it turns out that the hit on the sales tax was not, for the most part, was not as bad as we thought it was going to be.
People got away from going to the big box stores, I think, during the pandemic. And it's a trend, as we get out of it, I see continuing, because I think people are, big reason they're leery still about being amongst bigger crowds. So the local businesses, which in a lot of ways, the last number of years, because of the development and the proliferation of big box stores everywhere, the local merchant has really taken a big hit. If there is any silver lining at all from this pandemic, at least from a local business standpoint, that seems to be on the uptick again.
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, we did lose a lot of local businesses during
this.
No
question about
that. We lost a lot of restaurants, but I think a lot of local business owners have seen exactly how much members of their community cared. I know in my district, many people, even when restaurants were closed, bought gift cards from the restaurants to spend when they reopened, to let them know that there was going to be a market for them when mm-hmm. they came back.
Mm-hmm.
With the sales tax, though, if the money is spent locally, it's that locality that gets the sales tax. So even if the big box stores, it could be a big box store, but as long as it was in Westchester, we were getting the money. I think the way it's supposed to work, too, if you ordered from Amazon, Amazon owes a share of the sales tax money to us as well. So people, instead of spending, in London or Paris, or spending in Florida, or spending in, any one of a number of vacation places, we're spending more at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped keep the bottom from falling out of our sales tax numbers.
Some of these big box stores and in Amazon entities like that, do they need to, I hate to use the word made, should they be encouraged to participate a bit more locally, tax-wise, in the communities where they are? We hear about talk all the time about companies not paying their fair share, the biggest of companies not paying their fair share in localities. Can we do more to make sure those entities, those companies, give back from a tax-based standpoint more to the communities where they make money off of?
Well, one of the problems is their negotiators figured out that if they play one local government against another local government, we'll keep offering tax break here, tax mm-hmm. break there, and before you know it.
That's interesting. Yeah, that approach.
You know, people talk about the race to the bottom in terms of wages, for example. There's a race to the bottom in terms of tax base as well. Mm-hmm. And I think what we really do need to do at the state level, I mean, there are national issues too that we could talk about, but since, you know, even if we want to raise our sales tax a penny, we have to get approval from New York State. So much of our tax, the only thing we're allowed to do is raise property taxes, which, as you know, there are plenty of people in the middle class in this county who have pretty much maxed out on what they could afford, and
right.
even then some. So I think it's really time for someone to sit down, do a serious macroeconomic analysis, and figure out how we might be able to rejigger our whole tax structure as a state to make sure that our schools are financed properly and our local governments are financed properly without pricing people out of their homes.
Should schools be fully reopened in September, or is this a conservative approach on your part too?
I think the answer is probably. I mean, as we've been talking about,
right.
Both on and off screen, we don't know what's going to come.
This is June right now, September.
If things are as they are now,
mm-hmm.
The default definitely should be children back in the schools. But we need to be ready in case something starts going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've had enough experience with virtual learning and so on that we should be able to switch back if we have to, if there's some strain that's resistant to the vaccines or there's something else going on, you know, that poses a serious threat to our children or to certain people who work in the schools. But I think at this point, hopefully just about every adult who works in our schools has been vaccinated. By September, hopefully, we will have a pretty high critical mass of children, at least middle school and high school age, vaccinated. And if I remember correctly, during the last school year, that was pretty much where the transmissions were occurring. They were not, it seemed the younger the child, the less the transmission.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can get those things done over the summer, make sure we've gotten that right, I think we should be able to reopen safely. I mean, I still think that it doesn't hurt to keep a certain residuum of precautions and be ready in case something goes wrong. But I should think that we should be able to get our children back in school in September.
In my media role doing different things around the area, I happen to work as a public address announcer at a variety of high schools and colleges around the tri-state area for a variety of different sports, mostly in Westchester. During the just concluded spring football season, the fall two sports season that we had around New York State, at one of the schools where I work in Westchester, before a Friday night game, I had an assistant in the booth at that school to provide sound effects. And before one of the games, she asked me, "Are you fully vaccinated?" I said, "I have one. I'm going to get the second one in a couple of days on Monday." And this was a Friday night. She said, "I have both. I'm not going to be comfortable working with you tonight." And she was able to excuse herself from working with me. And I had no problem with that. I could totally understand that. I had one at that point, the trepidation.
Sure.
On her part. And this seems to be what a big part of the problem is in getting schools reopened. Some say six for me, some say half dozen for me, and somewhere in the middle, you know, that six and a half dozen have to meet. It's basically the same thing. And we have to figure out a way, maybe a better way, to get schools fully reopened. And yet, I agree with you that we have to be totally conservative about this and be sure. And we have some people who say, well, you know, it's proven that kids don't spread this disease. Maybe they should do a little more research and find that young people, children, have been prime spreaders, I think, unintentionally, of course, of this disease in ways that we may not even realize. And this seems to be an issue that we're still going to kick around during the summer, no doubt about that.
Well, part of the problem was during most of this pandemic, our chief scientific agencies in the federal government were pretty much shut down because we had an administration that figured their best path to electoral victory was just to completely deny there was any problem. And there's probably a lot we don't know. We certainly, we're only beginning to learn, for example, which variants are becoming more prevalent in the country. For example, it's the variant from India, which has already pretty much overtaken the UK. Mm-hmm. Is starting to gain a certain level of
prominence in this country. It's been
found
in at least
13 states. I think at this point they think it's 6% of all cases, but if it is more contagious than the others, that those percentages will go up pretty quickly in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. We see India, we see Brazil, we see Argentina, Australia, Taiwan, Dubai. And we had an outbreak on top of Mount Everest a few weeks ago, to which I said you can pretty much touch the sky from there. So if it can get you there, it will get you anywhere. Do we need to be a bit more proactive about these new strains, these variants that we really don't know a lot about yet in this country, and yet we seem to be kind of blowing them off, so to speak, that, well, it's happening there, and we're all getting vaccinated now, and it's not going to touch us here. And do we need to look over our shoulders a bit more about these variants?
I think our scientific community is actually doing a pretty good job with that. For example, all of the vaccine manufacturers are currently testing against all of the ones that they have samples for so they could be ready to devise booster shots as needed. I think that we are, I think the federal government is doing more, but it's really important to stay on track. And remember, the reason why we were behind the eight ball in the beginning was because we had public health people as a long-term proposition stationed in China, because that's where a lot of our flu vaccines, our flu strains came from. That's where where SARS 1 and 2 came from. So we had people in place to monitor. That program was discontinued under the prior administration. So we were weeks, if not months, behind seeing the first evidence of this. And that's a real problem. Now, one thing that's going on that I think was started in the Netherlands that we are doing as a county and a lot of places around the country are, is in order to get a widespread sense of what's going on in the community in terms of the amount of disease and which strains and so on, they're doing testing from wastewater treatment plants. So that way, that won't tell you if an individual is sick, but it will tell you what is proceeding to race its way through a community. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things were very helpful in Europe, and we're using them more and more here too. But once again, we were behind the eight ball in the beginning. We don't want to shut everything down early, and then when we have a new wave, have to reinvent the wheel again. That would only end up costing more lives.
With the summer months here, can we be confident around Westchester that we can enjoy our outdoor facilities like Rye Playland, parks, beaches, golf courses, et cetera? Or should we even be a bit skeptical about getting back to full blast with all of that?
Completely full blast is its own question, but I think we're ready. I mean, last summer we still had most of our parks open. We had pools open on a somewhat restricted basis. There were 3-hour stretches twice a day with the cleaning in between. The golf courses were open. The one major recreational facility that we had that was not open was the Playland Amusement Park. Although my husband and I went over to the promenade a few times, and people were certainly using that and enjoying it. At this point, Playland is going to open. It's supposed to open at noon on, I believe, June 26th. At this point, they are still keeping the mask requirements up, which, as I understand, I mean, there's been a huge hoo-ha about this on Facebook. I think the rules are basically what they've been at the beach and what the common sense rules are. Within your small, if you are within a small group and there's no one around you, you don't have to mask up, but you need those masks because in amusement parks in particular, you know, kids start running into each other and everything else. So you do really need that capacity. I understand they're also going to be taking names and addresses for contact screening, which at this point, let's hope we're not going to need.
Right.
But just in case, it's not a bad discipline to do.
Mm-hmm. I also look at it from the standpoint of that you could be vaccinated. You could not have your mask on. You could be at a Rye Playland or over at Sprained Ridge Golf Course or over at Secor Woods Park in Hartsdale, walking around, think nobody's around you, and somebody who is not vaccinated without a mask comes by and does something where they can infect you, or you in turn may do something that you can affect them as they run by or walk by or surprise you. You can be surprised, and we don't want to be surprised. I think that's a key.
We don't want to be surprised, but I, you know, as someone who lives on a suburban street and goes for walks all the time, you know, I still take my mask with me, but I find that most days I don't even have to put it up to my face because everyone is far enough away. And one other thing to be helpful is the damper the air, the more humid it is, the harder it is for the virus to spread. Just to kind of put in your own personal reference box there. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot more we can do. But again, a certain amount of it is not complete elimination of risk. It's management of risk. And we as a society, in conjunction with our public health professionals, have to decide what is a society we want to enforce against. And then we have to decide as a society to, you know, deal with people who may have a lower tolerance for this kind of thing and not give them a hard time if they continue to wear a mask while the rest of us don't. I went to a Memorial Day. I went to a number of Memorial Day ceremonies this year, which was great because last year, of course, you know, we were not able to do them.
Yeah.
But I decided early on, you know, it was still early for me going out among people. Plus, you're dealing with a lot of veterans in their 70s, in their 80s, in their 90s. I made the decision that I was, for the most part at least, you know, I take it off at the microphone or whatever, but I was going to keep a mask on.
Right.
Only one person said something to me about it. But one person did say something to me, and I said, you know, yeah, I'm double vaxxed too, but I have to be concerned about what happens to him and her over there. And part of me feels a little bit better still doing this a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. But I have to admit, as fewer and fewer people are wearing them and wearing them less frequently, you know, even a stubborn old Polish lady as me still find myself, you know, feeling a little bit funny and sometimes taking off my mask too.
Or as somebody said to me locally a few days ago, you know, it's a good thing we had Memorial Day weekend mostly washed out. It was mostly a rain out because it kept everybody from congregating the way they would have. So that rain was a blessing in disguise, not for shop owners who needed that money, and especially in places around the tri-state area like the Hamptons and the Jersey Shore. But in general, that's when they make their money there. But in general, I agreed with that person and said, yeah, you're right about that. I thought about that, too, that the washout kept people apart, and that was a blessing in disguise. We'll see how that progresses now during the summer with everybody outdoors again. Mary Jane Shimsky, 12th District Legislator, Democratic Majority Leader here in Westchester. She represents the bottom half of the River Towns area of the county, also part of Greenberg and also the Edgemont section of Scarsdale, too. And Mary Jane Shimsky, with the spike in gun violence and gang violence around our area, can we ever find a solution to this? Because in different ways and shapes and forms, this has been going on since we were kids and before, in different iterations and forms through the years and decades and through different ethnic and racial groups, obviously, too. We're at a point now where we see an incident, pretty much an incident or two or more every day. And I look at this and say, how can we stop this? Now, I'm going to preface this by saying about 18 months ago, it's 18 months now that my mother passed away. And right before she died, she was a big believer in Michael Bloomberg and his anti-gun program, et cetera. One of the last things she said to me is, and this is true, she said, John, stop the guns. John, get rid of the guns. And she knew that she was in her final days, but that was one of her final thoughts for me. And I said, yeah, Ma, you know, I wish we could. You know, we both do. How do we do that? Is there a way to do that?
Well, it's kind of, you know, it goes back to a lot of what our prior discussion on COVID was, right?
Right.
You know, you take a society like Australia. They have their first mass slaughter in a school with an automatic weapon. What do? They ban automatic weapons. And guess what? Their gun deaths went down dramatically. Yeah, it's something similar going on in New Zealand when that big mass killing happened. But in this country, you have a certain percentage of people who say, I have a right to carry my guns. And you had a federal district court judge in California last week say that people needed assault weapons to defend their homes. So the contagion.
I hadn't heard that.
The misinformation. His name was Benitez, and he declared that the California's assault weapons laws were unconstitutional. I think that decision is on stay at pending appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things he said in the opinion was people need these things to defend their homes. Defend against what? I'm not sure. And if you need that kind of weaponry to defend,
must
if the threat out there is that big, you've
that
got bigger problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I despair, you know, in so many respects, I despair about this because I remember the day that Sandy Hook happened.
So do I.
And, you know, I'm going to risk going into TMI territory. But that class of first graders that got completely mowed down, they had so many bullets pumped into them that their bodies were dismembered.
Right.
So you would think at that point that a decent, good society would say, we have to look at this. And they would look at those weapons and they would figure out some way to put them on the path to extinction.
Mm-hmm.
We did not do that. Most Republicans, this is not just a Republican versus Democrat issue. Most Republicans want background checks.
70%.
The same person would not want background checks.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a faction of the Republican Party in control of enough of the operations of Congress, even with the narrow Democratic majorities we have now, that they are able to stop any attempt to do anything that would make sense to try to keep what are essentially weapons of mass destruction out of the wrong hands. Person number one, John, is Mitch McConnell. And he just got reelected comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And his members in the Senate keep reelecting him. And so basically you have what? You have 50 people who are saying it's okay if little children get blasted to smithereens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what I would love to think. I mean, I plan to fight on this issue as long as I have to, until I draw my last breath. But I don't know what it's going to take. I honestly don't know.
I remember hearing about Sandy Hook. I got into my car the day it happened and turned on one of my old radio stations where I worked at WCBS 880 in the city. My colleagues there were just breaking the news when I got in my car. First of all, I said to myself, wait a second, this couldn't possibly be. This is the Northeast. Stuff like this doesn't happen here. We realize it does. Secondly, I know a few people in that community in Sandy Hook and was in touch with them right after that. I know what they experienced. They had kids who went to school with some of the victims. And I thought about this, especially since then. Does this, in a lot of ways, come down to a cultural divide that we're in more urban areas here in the Northeast, or in a Chicago and LA and the big urban centers around the country, and that a lot of people who oppose gun control come from more wide open areas where they think that you can't get hit with a stray shot?
Well, there is a certain amount of that, no question. And there are certain things that are certainly less dangerously done in rural areas, although we know that there are exceptions to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
There was a case in Maine, I think it happened when I was a young adult, so that was a long time ago, where the wife of a college professor, they moved from some urban area, was hanging up her laundry and was shot by a hunter. And the hunter claimed that because she was wearing white gloves, he thought she was a deer, and the jury acquitted.
Right.
When I first heard of that, you know, there are certain moments in life when you hear things and you say, you know, this cannot possibly end well.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was the Oklahoma City bombings. Remember how when everybody was assuming it was a foreign Islamic terrorist
right.
group,
mm-hmm.
everybody was foaming at the mouth, including the Republicans. And as soon as they found out it was a white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed,
right.
American-born domestic terrorist,
mm-hmm.
all of the Republicans stopped criticizing him. That was, out of all the things that have happened in the lead-up to where we are as a society today, that was probably the one I found most ominous.
How do you respond to, and I get this when I say we need to control gun violence and we need to control who has a gun, why they have a gun, and what kind of a gun they might have, and how they have those guns, and how they might use them. I say we need much better controls. I have some people who push back and say, well, John, and you've heard this many times, I know, it's not the gun that kills people, it's a person that kills people, to which I say, well, it's like drugs. You can't have a drug addict if they don't have the ability, access to getting drugs. Same thing with somebody committing gun violence. If you cut off the supply, the source of getting hold of a gun that can lead you to committing gun violence, well, you've stopped it right there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, replay what we know about Sandy Hook in your mind with a knife instead of an automatic weapon. Or for that matter, replay it with a pistol instead of an automatic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
The results most likely would have been far different.
Mm-hmm.
We do occasionally see more murders in Europe than we've seen in past decades. But you know what? The number of people dead, the number of people wounded are much lower because they generally have to resort to things like knives instead of guns.
I have a good friend who lives in Harrison, who says to me, John, you know, he's a libertarian. He says, John, if you take my guns away, if we take everybody's guns away, think about this, that we'll be a lot more open to the government sending troops in and shutting us down. And how will you defend yourself when that happens?
All right. We have an army that has machine guns and tanks and bombs and bazookas.
They can do it anytime they want.
Right.
Which is what I call
it. You know, if you have the equivalent of an AK-47 or a Kalashnikov or something, there's only so much that you're going to be right. able to do with that anyway. And quite frankly, there's only been a relatively short period of time that I've really been fearful about the future of our democracy. And that's been a time where we've had a record number of guns on the street.
As we move ahead here in the county in 2021, what are your thoughts about the rest of this year in Westchester? What would you like to see as we continue to move in, hopefully, this continued direction of reopening and getting life as back to normal as possible?
I really would like to see things get closer to normal for our school children. My youngest was in the middle of a semester abroad in Rome when all of this happened. And when I think of everything that she lost in the last couple of years, it's really a shame. And I would like to see something better for our young people, but we have to make sure that we are not unwittingly starting a giant wave that's going to result in more death and economic dislocation again. Mm-hmm. As you know, I'm a big person with fixing our infrastructure. I ran into four major projects when I went to run an errand in Hartsdale today. So we're clearly doing a lot of that. Hopefully we will be doing more. And the other thing I hope is, because of the exigencies of COVID, I think people have been spending a lot more time outside. They've been spending more time in nature. And I hope they continue to do that even when it is safer to be inside again.
And we'll always have the bottleneck at the Four Corners in Hartsdale, I guess, right? What would Westchester be without that?
Yeah. Although the worst of it today was actually on Central Avenue because they have lanes closed for mm-hmm.
Ongoing construction work.
Yeah,
which is what we get on Central Avenue sometimes. I do have to say, through the decades, the traffic has eased up at the Four Corners, but I remember the heyday in the 80s and 90s and what that was like. And that has eased up a bit through the years because of the work that's been done around the area there in order to alleviate traffic. And it's just, you have certain memories around certain areas in the Four Corners and Hartsdale that still rings supreme to a number of people I know after all these years.
Yeah, I think they may have done something with the timing of the lights. It's not as bad as it was, but right. I sat through, I think, a cycle and a half today.
Mm-hmm. Mary Jane Shimsky, 12th District Legislator here in Westchester, Majority Leader on the County Board, as always. Thank you for being part of Westchester Talk Radio. Look forward to our next opportunity to speak again.
It's always great to join you, John.
Thank you, Mary Jane Shimsky, here on Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. I'm John Marino. This is a Cup of Joe political show produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that Service built. Lipolis Electric, don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis. Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth through a fiduciary standard. White Plains Hospital and Michael Labriola, landscape design and construction of R. Monk. Catch all of our Westchester, Rockland, Putnam and Dutchess, Orange and Fairfield County talk radio programming on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.